You have to understand our past, because you will decide our future. They're starving now, and they're more dangerous than ever. But we have to go on. We have to outlast them. Only one species is getting out of this alive.
Greetings, and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 9, Chariots of Fire. No, Reign of Fire. I'm Chris, and I dig fast, and I dig deep, and I don't stop till I... Oh, wait, I've completely lost track of that whole thing. And with me in chair number 2, the only thing worse than a dragon, it's Pete.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And sitting here in chair number 3 beside me, he leads, we follow. It's Brian.
Hey, guys.
Yay,
welcome.
Brian.
I'm glad to be back.
Number 4, and in chair number 4, if it weren't for her, we'd all be speaking dragon now. It's Sharon.
Wait a minute. I thought we'd all be speaking British. I mean, English.
No,
no, I'm speaking English now.
Yes. So this is a movie about a bunch of poor British people who have nothing to do and no hope until an American comes along and saves them.
No. He doesn't save them.
Okay, so...
No, he doesn't.
So what you're saying is I was supposed to watch The Great Escape.
Yes. No, you're supposed to watch Independence Day.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, that too.
No, it's actually Avatar, but that's okay. We are going to talk about Reign of Fire. That is a movie about dragon. It's a zombie apocalypse movie where dragons play the zombies.
Oh,
and,
I
and
like Bat, that.
And Batman and Stoic and Tip Topper and Dr. Bashir all fight against dragons.
Was he in that?
Yeah, he's AJ.
No.
Oh,
yeah. Oh wow. How about that? Okay. So this is from 2002. And it has Christian Bale. It has Batman and Leonidas as best friends.
See, I called him Stoic because, you know, dragons, how to...
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, okay.
It's on my...
Really?
It's on my list.
Yeah. We gotta put that on the list to cover.
It's down there. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because they're phenomenal. Let's talk about those instead.
That would be a more enjoyable time. On
we could talk about a great many movies without ever coming close to Reign of Fire.
Yeah, it's true.
Before we'd still be talking about Reign of Fire.
So you said that it was a movie about, it's like a zombie apocalypse, but the dragons play the zombies. I thought this is the first time I've seen this movie, and I was frightened that everybody was going to die. And at some point during the movie, I thought, well, maybe this is a movie about hope. And I guess since people are listening to this, I can't spoil it for them. It does have a happy ending.
Sorry.
Okay. Crap, because I actually hadn't finished it yet.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Brian.
Gosh, I'm sorry, Brian.
Sharon, up to a point. See, halfway through the movie, I was afraid that everybody was going to die. But for the other half of the movie, I was afraid that everybody wasn't going to die.
Oh, that's so mean.
But that's okay, because Christian Bale turned out to be the man that everyone needed versus what everyone deserved.
Yeah.
Now,
he's the hero that Northumberland deserves.
I did see similarities between this and Walking Dead, so I don't know how many of you actually watch Walking Dead.
Oh, I do.
Yep.
Yeah?
No.
But you know the premise, Pete. Right?
Yeah, we watched some. About
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
We've talked
so,
hey, Pete, trailer, there's zombies. There's...
Oh, my God.
Oh, stop it.
not in this film, Pete. It's okay. Not in this film.
There's this scene where the dragon is up.
I was about to say, because if there were zombies in this film, I totally missed that. Oh, no. Oh, no. Wait. Matthew McConaughey is in the film. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't you see him? You know, sleeveless, a lot of tattoos, cigar.
Wow.
Shaved head.
Hard to miss.
Yep. Big beard.
The difference here?
Total zombie. Total zombie.
Boys, bring it back. Bring it back. Back to the... Okay. So there's a scene where the dragon is sitting. I mean, I can see it in my head. I can't really see it, but I can clearly picture it. There's the big male dragon is sitting on top of the castle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but I did think of the prison in Walking Dead. And I mean, I don't know if they look similar.
Spoilers, but... I'm only on season 2.
No.
Okay.
No, they don't. They look nothing.
Okay. But I did, I'm just saying, for me, I thought of it. And like, just some of the chase scenes, like when the people were in the field. I mean, and to me, dragons are much, much scarier because, well, zombies aren't that scary to me because they're so very slow. Yeah. And like, really, all you have to do is shoot them in the head. But dragons are.
You can't shoot them in the head.
No. I mean,
you
can't
shoot them in the head, but
you need like a much, much bigger gun. And I don't know why, but so, I'm speaking with...
When you're being attacked by a dragon, you have to shoot right into its mouth.
Well, just the fact that a dragon has a breath weapon, so that it's bigger.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a part in that movie that makes no sense to me.
Okay.
Only one?
Just one?
No, but this is the big glaring one that slapped me in the face like a wet towel.
Oh.
And that is that there's a moment when he says, man the 50 cal... Okay. And then lock and load, and nobody moves to man the 50 cal.
Yeah, they're all sort of paralyzed.
They all just kind of take their ARs and they lock and load on them. And I'm like, you've got a really big gun.
Yeah.
Now would be the time for somebody to jump in there.
Yeah, it's like, well, damn it, Piscatelli.
They do talk. They do actually, if I remember correctly, talk about the fact that.
You got to get your vertical up. It's a business here.
If I remember correctly, they actually talk about the fact that the tank that they have, which is its own set of fun little... Wait, what was that? Doesn't actually do much to the dragon. And I think part of it is because it just doesn't have the proper aiming facilities to be able to get a bead on the dragon. So 50 cal, I don't think is going to do much on it.
Yeah, but still, I think that if I've got a choice between my pissy little automatic rifle and a 50 cal, I'll hop on 50 cal.
Kalashnikov versus a Browning 50 cal. Yeah, absolutely.
I see your point, Pete, and I raise you. I'm going to raise you.
Where did they get the fuel for the helicopter?
No. Now, being a teacher, I just have to say, since when can kids go on active or go into active construction sites? And not only that.
Without helmets.
But
OSHA.
Then,
OSHA. All over this film. OSHA.
But then they ask him to take a look. I mean, like.
Don't you think there's anybody on this site more qualified?
One of my favorite parts is the guy sitting there sends a kid in without a helmet and then decries unsafe conditions.
Yeah,
I was just, you know, and I do try to suspend. I mean, I'm a fantasy girl. I love
so
fantasy.
I was kind of really hoping that kid would go, you know, like I knew that he was going to be Quinn, you know, and he was going to be like the hero of the movie. But he was such
he wasn't that. He was a cute kid.
OK. So, I've got like some quotes from him.
Okay,
so
do a quote.
Someone's going to clean up after you guys.
Yeah. OK. Thanks, you little jerk.
What?
Yep.
Have you been smoking?
Oh,
I told you, I only smoke when I've been drinking.
Oh, what a little smartass. And then, like, the one guy who's friendly to him.
And what brings you to the asshole of the world?
You're passing through it. What's that make you?
I would push him in with that dragon and close the door.
See, and
he goes, what are you doing in the asshole of the world? Here, why don't you take this flashlight with no head protection and go into a void that could collapse at any second? Go ahead.
I mean, I just...
You're only chief engineer's son. Why don't you just go ahead and do that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I...
Maybe that was part of the planning.
Shenanigans on letting a... How old was he? Nine?
12.
Years old?
Oh, he's,
really?
He's probably 11 or 12, yeah.
Oh, okay, well...
They say in the article, 12-year-old boy.
Oh, okay, I missed that. Oh, okay. Thank you. You're
so, I've seen this film three or four times now. And I think this was the first time that I actually thought, oh, wait, maybe he's not, in regards to the guy he walks up to and he says, you know, what brings you to the asshole of the world? And he says, you're passing through it. What does that make you? Mm-hmm. Every other time that I've watched this film, I've thought, that's his dad.
Ah.
Oh, no, it's not.
He's still, it's not. If I, like, when I watched it this time, I was like, no, wait, that's not his dad.
No,
but
his
it would
dad,
kind of
yeah his dad's no. not in the picture because when he
yeah
his mom
maybe we could ask for it yeah
the paper he got some kind of scholarship to school
and lost it
and
right
well he, and he's well yeah, because the world was
see and I thought it was the wife had worked with her husband. They'd gotten a divorce. They still work together. She was kind of his boss, and he was always basically being an asshole about what she was doing and the way she handled work and da-da-da-da. And the kid comes in and visits and sees both of his parents, and he's just not friendly with it. Like, that's how I took it every other time.
You're extrapolating an awful lot there.
I totally did not take that to be the situation at all. But
nice. Made up a whole other movie.
Nice way to do that.
Well, and it all came, honestly, from that one line where he came in and he was kind of like completely dismissive of this guy.
Yeah.
And this guy was also extremely familiar with him.
With him.
Right.
It was that exchange.
Well, I got the impression, you know, from the moment he walked into the construction site, it seemed that everyone there knew him, and he came into the construction site every day after school.
Right.
Yeah. Which maybe in England, you can walk into a live construction site. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we're talking about this like setup of his character in the beginning as if it matters.
That's right. True. Because he gets really bat matter. In the eyes, and yet that doesn't affect his eyes for the rest of his life. So
yeah,
right, there's no connection. I thought maybe he would have some connection with the. I watched.
You thought that
the
dragon
time.
Was Voldemort.
Well, I didn't.
I know that's and he was that's a better lived. Movie. I'd
no,
see that.
No, I fantasy, see fantasy what I thought. Like what I thought would be cool connection. Is if he got spat in the eyes and then he got dragon sight. So during the magic hour, he couldn't see worth shit.
That's his power.
So why? I mean, I don't know. Why did they choose to do that with his eyes? It had no
because
connection.
I guess you have to have some setup.
I think they
but
wanted to give
really
him an out. They wanted to show that the kid was going to escape, but nobody else would.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
They put a lot of effort into that opening for really kind
and
of
then
nothing.
He saw the first, and he saw the male dragon, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's how it came up later. So the point is, Quinn's mom is the boss of the people who let the dragon apocalypse happen.
Okay.
Well, technically, isn't it Quinn who starts the dragon apocalypse? Doesn't he?
He wakes it up, but they would have done.
This is
like
the dragon failure or something. Oh no, wait! I think it's Leg.
Wait.
They opened the door, so he—I mean, whether he went through or not, they would have woke her up.
So it does matter what the sex of the dragons are, too. Can you play that little soundbite?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, because it was a major plot point that most of them were female, and it came up with this.
I bet you, Quinn. You ever seen a male?
I don't know. When I'm running for my life, I don't stop to look at the plumbing.
Oh, yeah.
You're killing me.
So, yeah, so that happened.
See, and I actually think that the whole opening, quite honestly, was a bit of a commentary on our carelessness as human society.
That the dragon is supposed to be the natural extinction.
It's a little bit of the orcs for Tolkien, where, you know, it's the thing that balances out our over-exuberance. This is all about, you know, it's the hyper-industrialized setting where it's literally in London and they're mining, which I don't know of any open mines in London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Well, they're not mining. They're drilling for a new subway pass.
Okay, cool.
Gosh, I didn't catch that. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. You know,
I think that's
the article. Actually, that's one of the things that Quinn looks at. Yeah.
Okay. But they've got this kid who everybody, you know, they're all lax on what they're doing and how they're handling him, and because of that, basically nature comes in and just bites you in the butt. You know,
wow.
and so you've got him. There was a whole bunch of like just the visuals in the beginning that. I don't know. They reminded me of just hyper-industrialization.
So the montage of, like, the Eiffel Tower burning and...
Yes, stuff like that. And when he's in London as a kid and whatnot. And I liked that because it really kind of made this feel like the plague that is sent to punish mankind for not taking care of the world.
Right.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I think that was part of the subject.
I mean, that's one of the Quinn even says. They are the extinction event. They're the reason the dinosaurs died.
Yeah.
You know what the British found when they dug too deep. I'm sorry.
The ball hog?
So they end up in Northumberland. So and they have like a little survivor camp there, and it's just like a group of maybe 100 people. You know, maybe they're probably
well, I
about
think at one
200.
Point he says there are 65 adults up there, and then
okay.
they're all
a whole
kids.
Bunch of kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Kids,
a whole bunch
so
of kids.
Yeah.
I suppose they're taking the breeding program. You know, it's very important for survival.
Oh yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I did like their little mantra that they would say.
Oh, the prey? Yeah, I've got that right here.
What do we do when we wake?
Keep both eyes on this side.
What do we do when we sleep? Keep one eye on the sky.
Oh.
What do we do when we see him?
Because like somebody is dying.
I like the fact that he refers to those as their prayers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that reminded me of a book I read a while ago by Stephen Gould, and it was called Helm. And it was about a Earth colony where they had to imbue people with a reverence for hygiene because they were going to a planet where they had to, there was a great risk of infection and disease. So they had to make hygiene their religion.
Nice. Wow.
So there are like lots of little, like the curse words are bad hygiene, you know, stuff like that.
Well, so you guys know that I like the parts with the kids, but what did you guys think about some of those parts and some of those scenes?
I really liked their take on Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was fun.
The Star Wars
panto? Yeah, that was neat.
Yeah.
I thought that was a lot of fun.
What?
Ooh, Chris, can you play that one?
I can. I got it right here. Yeah.
I'm your father.
And then one of the kids says, can you do Lion King? And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, if you don't...
So that's the way they pass down their
entertainment. Because if you don't have electricity, if you don't have televisions and Wii, it would go back to...
I heard that as television and weed. Sorry.
Oh,
a little bit of Netflix and chill going on over there, huh?
No, I'm not.
It's cruel to be kind.
I don't want to get bleeped this time.
No, you're not bleeped.
I just like that when – I think that's why I like the zombie stuff too now is because when it takes people back to an earlier time and – because I think kind of TV and video games have taken over too much. And well, you know, that's just my philosophy of, I think kids today should talk more to people. I mean, I don't want there to be like a dragon apocalypse or anything to, okay, I better stop.
If there is one, it's probably your
fault. You don't. No. I like the fact that when they said, did you make that story up yourself? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
totally. Who's going to sue him at that point?
But you know, he was 12. So he, as a child, grew up with Star Wars and Lion King, so he would remember.
Of course, that was his cultural touchstone.
So,
and they don't remember Dragon Day. I don't know what they call it.
And they don't even remember the character of Touchstone. Oh, wait, sorry.
And even comic books, like there wouldn't be any left because they, you know,
they're all ash. The dragons ate all the comic books.
There's one nerd in that entire castle. There are comic books. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Well.
Actually, right next to his really, really old school Playboys.
Exactly. With the staple.
Yeah, hey, if there's no internet, those Playboys are going to be worth something again.
And now they're changing Playboy, actually. I heard it on the radio.
No more nudes.
Right.
Yep.
So that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Well, what's the point?
My point
the articles, like it's
the
always
articles.
Been.
Yeah,
what is
the... Right?
No, because then suddenly it's GQ with a different name.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so they have this, you know, and I think they have got too many children there. If there's only 65 adults, I think that might be too many children.
He was gathering them.
It's very irresponsible to bring children to a dragon apocalypse in the first place.
True.
But he was finding them, guys. Oh, you're
I don't know, because his point because his whole point is that, you know, they're in a race now. One of the two, he even says in his little speech in the opening montage that one of the two races is going to survive this.
Yes.
And no, since through some miracle the dragons spawn by tuna strategy, you know.
Okay, I didn't get that. There's only
That makes no biological sense whatsoever.
Male dragon.
Well, there's only one male dragon, and he's in England. He goes around the world. He's a very, very busy man.
Well, especially because there's so many fish that if you go by that logic that it's one male with a community of lots and lots of females. In those communities, what you tend to find in the animal kingdom is that if the male dies, one of the females just mutates and changes her gender. Yeah. Yeah, and becomes the new male. It's called a protogenous hermaphrodites. Mm-hmm. You know, Clown and Emony Fish are this, like Finding Nemo. And it's literally Nemo, his dad in the movie, should have changed gender and become his mom. And that's what would have happened in this, if that's what they're based on. Like, for me, looking at it from a biological perspective, I was like, yeah, nope.
Yeah, no.
I guess we have to suspend our disbelief a little more.
Hugely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that here. I mean, it's an enjoyable movie, and I did kind of like, you know, watching it. But there's a lot of the main problem I had while watching the movie was the scale of the size of the male dragon.
Yes.
You said it kept changing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It didn't feel quite. There were times that I was like, wait, I thought it was bigger, or wait, I thought it was smaller.
Smaller.
You know.
The most egregious example is when it was sitting on top of the castle. And it's like, now it's Godzilla size. Mm-hmm. You know, and before it was maybe 100 feet. And then when it flew up over Parliament and ate the female.
It was looking at probably 350, 400 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, that's colossal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so its wingspan was enormous
this
there.
This was made when? 2000?
2002.
So why didn't they... do the scale a little bit better?
Because nobody cares.
It was just
cares.
Okay.
Nobody cared.
Okay. I mean, this is what else is going on this year. This is episode two.
Realistically, what they were looking for right there, quite honestly, is refrigerator logic. Mm. While you're watching the film, you're not going to care. Afterwards, you're going to go, wait a second.
Wait a minute.
Or maybe
that
was
a little bit big.
Maybe we're just that geeky that we, we are doing a podcast about.
Well, it's not just that, but I think that, part of being geeks is feeling passionate about the subject matter. And if we're passionate about fantasy movies, we want some consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It was, like I said, this was the first time I saw it. So another thing that gave me goose pimples was when the American showed up at the castle, because again, I was thrown back into that. Sort of when strangers meet the main characters, I thought, wow, are they gonna try to do bad things
here,
to
I have
them?
The,
you know,
I have the introduction here.
Only one thing worse than a dragon.
Me,
sorry, Americans.
Which is a little humor, but I was actually thinking, oh gosh, I hope this. I'm glad it didn't turn into like a Walking Dead situation where, I mean, it seemed like it was going to, especially, during that party scene where he just starts yelling at everybody and says, you're all idiots and what do you celebrate?
Yeah. I mean, that came out of, it was kind of stupid lit, they have like, they're living on, subsistence, they have no power, and yet they have a killer sound system.
Well, was that for us? Or
I think
did they
you,
really
I think
have
you
it?
Have to have certain luxuries to get by in these sort of stark conditions, Chris.
See, and honestly, I chalked that up to the audience that they're going to go after. This is going to be your 20-something male bachelor, and with a bachelor, he's going to have a threadbare apartment with no food and a killer sound system. So
it's someone they can identify
with. Quite honestly, most of the guys who would watch that would go, oh, that's totally what I'd do.
That would make sense because that makes Matthew McConaughey the jock.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, here he comes after everybody's party. Yeah.
Envy the country that has heroes!
It's like, psych, you thought I was on your side? Nope, F you guys.
I say pity the country that needs him.
And then he looks around the room and says, you got any weed? And nobody said had any. And he said, it'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Oh, wow.
You're all nerds. Nerds.
And then he sat on the couch and said, all right, all right, all right.
Gotta tell you, one thing I like about your heroes, I keep getting older and they keep staying the same age.
So I actually did like a bit of the writing, because I felt like the person who wrote the film, which is Greg Chabot, in story and Kevin Paterka and somebody else, Matt Greenberg on screenplay. I felt like they had some subtle things in there.
Wait, Greenberg the vampire?
No, it's Greenberg
besides that.
The vampire.
Sorry.
For instance, Northumberland, where they were, is just absolutely littered with castles. because it's a traditional site where the Scottish and the English war a lot. And so there's lots and lots and lots of abandoned castles up there, which I liked that.
Well, we got tons of history lying about the place, big old castles, and they just get in the way. We drive, oh, there's a fucking castle, I have to drive around.
I just long for a bungalow.
But the
other thing is that area is considered to be the cradle of Christianity up in Northumberland. So the fact that they were literally sort of inventing this new dogma, this new religion with the children, I actually really liked, because it's, you know, it's that's historically where that came from, was that exact area. That and the fact of the character's name, Quinn Abercrombie. Abercrombie, one of its meanings is a whirlpool. He's conflicted. He's, you know, all of these things. It was little things like that that I was, you know, as a writer myself, I saw that and I was like, oh, I'm digging this. We got a lot of subtext going on here.
He is the maelstrom.
Yes. And it's everything is the confluence around that character.
Right.
And he's completely conflicted about how to handle the situation, whether or not to lead, whether or not, you know, like he's brazen as a child. And as an adult, he's not.
No.
That's McConaughey's character. McConaughey embodies what he sort of was when he was that, you know, shitty little mouth in London.
Yeah.
He was mouthing off to everybody. You know, he was, I am me, and you all know it, and you will all love me, and it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of little things like that when it came to the actual writing, I think those things normally get sort of left behind because of the style of film that it is.
Or subsumed.
They get subsumed.
Well, I was trying to decide throughout the movie if I thought he was a likable guy. And I decided, yes, that I liked him. And especially there's a scene where the female pilot, I just can't remember her name.
Alex.
Alex.
Oh, thank you. Okay. It's not because she was, you know, a forgettable character. It's just because I'm bad with names.
I thought she was fairly forgettable.
Literally the only woman in the world here.
But they have a scene where she asks.
Oh, no, there was actually another couple women.
His mom was in it.
Were...
You know, I think there were a couple of them. But she says, you know, is that your son? When they're eating together, and I think they're eating or they're doing something together, and she says, is that your son? And he says, no. And, you know, where did you
find him? I found him in the pound.
Yeah. And, you know, but she says.
So he's still a dick.
No, but he says that.
No, because he's busting the kid's chops. The kid's there. So he says it so the kid can hear it, and then he tells her the real story.
Yeah, the real story, which is that his mom died and he was sitting by the body. And that kind of touched me. And then she said, another man would have left him because apparently, you know, she's met some real jerks along the way. And
I think she was also implying that Matthew McConaughey would have left him.
Mm. Oh, you know, I didn't get that, but you're probably right. I miss so much until I talk to
you. You see, I miss so much until I hear Brian talk about things, and I'm like, wow, God, I never even thought of that. Jeez.
I'm glad
Brian's on this, because I would just hate this movie otherwise.
I thought you picked this one.
Oh, I picked it just because it's so bad it's good. It's one of those ones that is just so cheesy that I enjoy watching it.
His comic book bags are made of silk. Celebrities pay him for autographs. People want to hear him describe his RPG character. He is the most interesting fan in the world. I do not always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Slice of Sci-Fi. Stay geeky, my friends.
Okay.
It's funny because I always look back on this. Name another dragon movie where the dragon is the focus that is actually as good as this. Because I can't.
Dragon Wars.
Dragon Wars.
Yeah, the Korean film. Yep.
I never saw that. I was in the middle of a divorce. So
we'll put it on the list.
It's also very silly.
See, and I don't like Dragon Slayer as much as this one. I liked this one more.
No,
I think I
like Dragon Slayer better than Rainfire.
Really? See, in this one, the dragons, maybe what it was is the dragons didn't feel hokey in this one. They felt like cheetahs.
They were scary.
They felt like an actual creature, not a mythical creature.
It totally puts like Tolkien's concept of a dragon to shame too, because they're such a force of nature.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, one of the females would have taken Smaug out, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. this thing is not a treasure hoarding creature that sits around telling poems and, you know, picking its teeth with the spear of its enemies.
If you tell me a story, I won't eat you. No, there's none of that.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to friggin' eat you.
Yeah, except for there was a little bit of a weirdness with like what the dragons are really after, because they went out to the farm to get all the vegetables before they were ripe.
That was
all the crops before they were ripe because they were starving. Yeah, Eddie. And the dragon came along and attacked them, and then, you know, Quinn came up and saved them, and he said, he doesn't want us, he wants the ash off the field. Well, why didn't the dragon burn the field to ash before?
As my understanding is, they had it somewhat hidden. That's my understanding. It doesn't seem terribly logical because it's, like, so big.
But it's in a valley.
Yeah, it's in a little valley. They kind of kept it hidden and kept watch up, which is sort of one of those, okay, so you have a eagle keeping watch. All you're going to go do is hide. The crops are lost no matter what if the dragon actually ever shows up.
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. It's another one of those. It's a nice plot hole, but, you know.
You know, plus, what do dragons poop?
Apparently ash.
That can't be, because they process the ash. That's what they live off of. So if they're living off of carbon, what are they excreting?
Diamonds?
Maybe they don't.
It's got to be something, like, I'm presuming nitrogenous, because otherwise you couldn't grow anything in stuff that they'd scorched.
Mm. Well, that's why they starve, though, because they don't renew their own.
And they did say the humans
are still able to. Well, I guess they could use their own waste for that. But anyway, it just didn't make sense that they should be able to support such a large field.
That's where diamonds come from. So millions of years later, after this extinction, people are going to buy them for their wives and say, here you go, here's dragon.
Oh my God.
Thanks to this group called De Boers.
Do you have a clip of what somebody thinks of Quinn? His best
Quinn?
Friend? Yeah.
I'm your best friend. And sometimes even I don't like you.
Yep.
That one.
And even I don't like you.
So here's the thing, right? I went through this looking for quotes. And after going through about 45 minutes of the movie, I realized that everything I had was from Creedy.
That's because Creedy has all the great lines. I mean, he's the one who sits there.
He does.
I love the part where Quinn turns to him and goes, right, if I don't come back, you know what to do. Goes,
what's that?
No, I don't know
what to do. No.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
And then he goes down to the gate and goes, that's a really big tank.
Yeah, so everything that was, like, Creedy was there, like, everything that was cool that was said was Leonidas.
Well, Creedy had to be the foil to, I mean, one of the nice things that Brian pointed out is if Quinn is the maelstrom, then Creedy's the eye of the storm. You know, he's the one who keeps Quinn focused.
He's the keel. Mm-hmm. He's the keel on the ship that keeps him going in the right direction.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh. I did not know he was Scottish.
Gerard Butler?
Yeah. Yeah,
you're kidding
me. For some reason, I thought he was Australian.
Oh,
really?
No.
Until this.
Oh no, no, no,
no, not at all.
I just like the fact that all the Scottish actors and guys who knew him before he became famous in the States, I'll call him Jerry. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because that's how he introduced himself. Ah, Jerry Butler. You know.
Oh. Okay.
But now he's drawed.
I liked the scenes where the guy. The stuff where the guys would jump out of the plane, I thought that was kind of cool. And the
archangels.
Yeah, I liked that. I thought.
Yes. Have you ever thought of giving them a parachute?
Yeah, I love that.
But I thought that was kind of a cool concept. If you're going to stop a dragon, how could you do it? Although, I mean, when we're supposed to see the really cool scene where they do it, everybody sort of, well, dies. Mm. But
what kind of confuses me, though, is at one point I don't know if it's Creedy or Quinn who asks Alex, why do they call them the archangels? And she says 17 seconds. And I'm like, okay, is that relevant?
Because I don't think it's a reference to anything.
I was supposed to say, I'm a fairly decent biblical scholar. I can tell you that doesn't come up a whole lot at all.
Because they're flying. I don't know. But I don't know what that meant, but.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's one of those cognitive dissonance moments in this movie that you sit there and go, Well, oh, there's groovy, a lot of them. But, you know, it's kind of like in that moment in Blackadder Goes Forth when, you know, the guys who fly the airplanes are known as the 20-minuters. And they ask Lord Flashheart, why do they call them the 20-minuters? He goes, oh, well, the life expectancy of a new pilot is 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You know? And so I was like, wow. And so, okay, so why don't you call them the 17-seconders or the short-timers or something like that instead of the archangels? It's not like you guys are coming down with the sword of Michael to strike the serpent. You're your bait. Yeah. You know?
Literally.
Yeah, pretty much. So here's how they work. Whoops, not that. God damn it, Piscatelli. You and your fucking vertical.
Get your vertical up.
All right. Get your vertical up.
Now, if Piscatelli only had Viagra, even in this desolate wasteland, he would have no problem getting his vertical up.
Brazen.
Sorry. So here's the Archangel plan.
Alvarez, you're the bait. Jefferson, you and I are the gunners. We don't open our chutes until you give us confirmation that it's down, right?
Haven't
okay,
they
here's
done
what
this
bothers
before?
Me about that. Right, haven't, yeah. Don't they know the plan?
Well, they do. They Whoops. Do have parachutes.
Okay.
They do have. They do yes. have parachutes. Like, so his statement of that actually is a little bit erroneous that she never actually does. This. It's
well, he was making a joke because she said they drop out of the sky and their life expectancy is 17
right.
seconds.
So he says, you know, wouldn't it be a good idea to give them parachutes? Assuming, of course, that they already had them.
Right.
Right.
But I do. I still like the plan. I thought that was a creative
yeah.
way.
Oh yeah,
to...
I think it. Yeah, it's good that they explained it to us, but they don't really need to explain it to
I
each
just
other.
Don't know why they don't hit the chutes until they get confirmation for the dragon down. If they miss, are they somehow going to fly back up again?
Oh, good
and
point.
Get a second
right.
shot. I don't get yeah. that. That's one of those statements that again made no sense whatsoever. The archangels are very, very. Maybe that's why they're there, archangels, because they move in such mysterious ways.
I guess it's just because it's the dramatic thing to say, even if it's completely illogical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically, we got one shot at this. What it is
what a way to die?
There's one shot at this, but the problem is this is their career. Their career is one shot at this. And
yes.
So the
true.
Writing is, yeah. we got one shot at it, let's go do this. But the problem is, it's like, well, wait, how long have you been in this? You're an 8-year veteran. And your logic is... That you're not going to, okay, I'm
we
not,
hit the
you know.
Until I get to confirm that they're down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. No, that doesn't happen. Unless suddenly, unless a plummeting dragon releases such an enormous thermal, they can ride it back up again.
Ooh, there you go.
That'd be cool.
Now you're cooking with gas.
I like that.
So,
I like
so
that
there
a lot.
There were some dramatic moments where both lead men come to the, you know, realization. I mean, they both decided in the movie that they were a little bit wrong and a little bit right, and then
and a little bit me
and
a little bit
country
because McConaughey comes right out and says you were right, at which point in time Quinn completely fails to say yeah no shit.
So you're gonna stand there while I get to punch you right
right in the face,
because that's what I was trying to stop you from doing earlier, so now you got a lot of punches
exactly.
coming.
There was, you know, there was several parts where I kind of feel like, you know, we hyped up the archangels thing. Archangels, archangels, archangels. And then we get a shot at it and they all die and we never use that again
this.
In the film.
Right.
Yeah. We have where it's get our verticals up. They go, they get the verticals up and one of them goes down. And so they've got this whole thing of going off of the dragon's behavior. And then the solution to that is I'm going to ride a horse to the top of the ridge and stick it there. And then the dragon's going to chase me. For some
yes.
frickin' yep. reason. And then we've got...
The horse clearly makes more noise than a motorcycle.
Obviously. You know, very, very loud.
Well, it looks tastier than
that's
a motorcycle.
Sure.
Right. And then we've got Creedy, who is set up to be this whole thing the whole time against him, and all he does is walk out of a door and he's dead. There's nothing more dramatic than that. And even with Van Zandt has been fighting these things his whole life, and he knows there's one way to take it down, and that's to jump off of it with a battle axe. Off
the
of
battle
it.
Axe and then just
and get eaten.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's the most useless thing that he knows that it's not setting up the kill shot.
Right,
which means it's doing nothing except for dying dramatically. You
right.
know?
Yeah, there was a lot of inconsistency.
I have a question for everybody because I couldn't catch it when I watched it, but does Creedy kick the door closed?
Yeah, he closes the door.
I just wanted to make sure. I wasn't sure if it was the force of the fire that closes the door or if he actually...
No, Creedy closes the door with himself on the other side.
I tried to run it so that it was slow enough that I could catch that, but it just wasn't happening.
All right, so what were you guys' favorite parts?
My favorite part was any time that Creedy and Quinn were interacting with each other. That was probably the best buddy relationship in a movie I've seen in a long time.
All right.
I think my favorite part was any time Creedy was talking, whether Quinn was there or not.
I would have to say, for me, I had sort of three moments that I really liked. One of them was... When Quinn is handed the flask right before they're taking down the big bowl, and he takes a sip, and we've been watching Van Zandt drink this thing the whole time, thinking he's got some vodka in there, and he drinks it and sort of spits it out.
Right,
he's like,
so badass.
He's like, it's water. He's like, yeah, what? loved that.
That was pretty good.
I did love the moment with the dragon on top of the castle, Sharon.
I could see it in my head.
And so, it was beautiful. Yeah, it really was this moment of like, wow, hello, you're the boss. Nice to see you.
Well, when he actually creeps up on the castle and kind of slithers up the side and then blows the fire down into it, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my most favorite moment though was sort of a moment that I put into the film, and that was actually when Van Zandt dies. Because he, right in that battle scene, he takes the shot and misses, as he's flying up, and it kind of explodes on the surface. Mm-hmm. And then he runs out and jumps. And all I said out loud was, did you get it? No, negative. It impacted on the surface. And I was straight off Death Star Trench Run. And I was like, oh, I loved that.
Yep. Oh, that was good.
And so for me, that was actually my favorite moment because I laughed out loud because of nothing in the film.
Oh, because you cracked yourself up.
I like the part with
the kids. Sorry.
The kids. Yeah. I because after that scene with the when the kids are like, we don't want to go to bed, and kids are still kids, and even though they're in the middle of a dragon apocalypse, like they don't want to sleep because this is the cool guy. And then there was another scene where the wind was sort of blowing through the castle, and this kid can't sleep, and he goes to Quinn and he's like, somebody said it was a dragon breathing, and Quinn, I think, lets him come into his room or something. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, he's got another bed in the room. He can sleep in
that. So. That scene. I just the nice cuddly moments. And
did you know that Jack Gleason was in there with the kids?
No.
You mean Joffrey?
No. So he's one of the kids who is there getting the story told to him. And then later on, after the dragon torches the castle and the kids all come out, there's a close-up of one kid.
Mm-hmm.
That's Jack Gleason.
Oh, that's
him. He's uncredited in the film, but yeah, that's actually him.
Oh, crazy.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, Joffrey. Joffrey himself. Now you know why he's such a pain in the ass.
Now we know.
Because he saw the world destroyed by dragons, and that's why he wants to kill the Targaryens.
Yep, exactly.
But I was happy that
I feel like it should have gotten a bigger laugh from you.
I'm laughing on the inside. I just wanted to say that. I've been watching zombie shows for so long. I'm kind of they're depressing. So I just want to know that these apocalypses aren't going to, I'm saying I don't want an apocalypse to be a total destruction thing. I'm just
so you
too
would
happy
say that,
of a person.
That because this is a dragon apocalypse, you were a little burned out?
I'm just glad that they killed the dragon at the end.
So you think apocalypse movies should be happier?
I think I'm just tired of the depression of watching zombie shows all the time.
Now you know why I gave up on the comic book.
It's just hard. It's just hard to watch
a moment
death, 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 More people are getting eaten. Let's see how this person's going to die. Oh, this person's going to die because they meet a group of people that they trust. And no, wait, they're cannibals. Or no,
see, I thought it was death cake.
Yeah.
No.
They only had two bits and they're completely out of the cake. Oh, okay, I'll take death. No, I meant cake, yeah. But yeah.
Well, we had a run on it.
I liked the ending because it was hopeful. And
I think the ending was hopeful, but it was a little bit too easy. Yeah. A
little bit.
You thought that was easy?
Well, on the plus side, he says they hadn't heard anything from them for 3 months, so that doesn't mean it's over. It just means they have a reprieve while one of the females changes into a male.
Right.
Oh my God. Right.
And now we get the sequel.
It's really
and now his
yeah.
And now his vision will change, and the zombies will come, right. And the zombies are going to have breath weapons.
Oh my God.
28 dragons
yep,
later.
Yep, totally.
Yep.
So, do zombies count as fantasy movies, or is that more horror?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because here's the thing about this this fantasy movie here.
There's nothing magical about them. They're made up of a collection of organs. They have a mind, a heart, and a liver. You take out one of these, you bring down the beast.
You see, I disagree.
All right.
I think there's something intensely magical about them in and of the fact that they reproduce in a way that's completely implausible.
And did anyone catch that they are dragons? So that's like pretty.
And they're freaking dragons.
All dragons.
Yeah, this is definitely a fantasy movie.
Plus, how do they stay in a torpor for that many millennia?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of
literally millions of years.
Yeah,
come on. Yeah. there's some kind of magic involved there. So,
but then again, you know, if you watch Fear the Walking Dead, well, I guess you don't, but you know. You have to believe when you watch some of these things, like that the media aren't going to say anything, that the police aren't going to say anything, that all the ambulance and doctors in the hospitals are just going to...
But we know that's not the case in this case, because we know that, like, even Time Magazine had, like, the title, Holy Shit, It's Dragons.
Yeah.
You're paraphrasing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I thought he was quoting.
So in some ways, I think this makes more sense than the zombie apocalypses, because...
Yes.
You know, because why? Because they're friggin' huge dragons. They breathe fire. They can tear you apart with their claws, and they're not
truly
moving
are,
slow.
They truly are the apex predator.
Really fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can a person stand up against a dragon? And, like, as they even say in this, the military did use their modern weapons to try and kill one. But when you killed one, you know, hundreds replaced that one because they were breeding.
I'd like to think that there's a female dragon somewhere in Africa or in Australia who's learned to fish.
You mean learn to eat fish?
Well, let's learn to, like, lure large quantities of fish out on the land so that she can scorch them and then eat the ashes. And that she's just waiting.
Yeah.
And for the male to die. And once that happens, the biochemical ping will happen, and then she becomes the alpha male. Then, guess what? No more torpor.
The sequel pretty much writes itself.
I think I'm going to have nightmares tonight, but is it time for us to rate?
Yeah. So, yeah. Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Reign of Fire?
I'm going to say how many gold pieces, and then I'm going to say why. Is that okay?
Okay. Okay. Then I'm going to ask you to summarize in the number of gold pieces.
All right. I will give this movie 3 gold pieces. And the reason is because I liked it better than the D&D movie. And I have to
look. You're setting the bar really
low. I know,
that's
but I have to. I think I have to. You know, sometimes you have to compare and contrast. And
no, I agree. In fact, this is almost contemporary with the Dungeons and Dragons movie, and the dragons were so much better.
So, and there were parts
for the same budget.
There
by the way,
parts of this that I, you know, I think 3 means it's average, and it was, you know, for me, it was enjoyable in parts, and I just
it was
don't
better than poor.
Yeah,
You're here. So,
it was much better than Cats. I'm going to see it again.
So that's my opinion, but I would really enjoy hearing.
Okay, Brian.
I'm
going to ask you a question, right, and you're going to answer it as honestly as you can. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Reign of Fire?
I'm
going to
go with I'm going to go with 3 gold and 6 silver.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Mostly because, quite honestly, like, with all the plot holes, the writing was fun. With all the plot holes, the dragons weren't bad. And with all the plot holes, I was entertained.
Yeah.
All right. The plot holes do bring it down, but all in all, it's a fun setting. It's a fun premise. It's some fun characters. They definitely have some character arcs, and the dragons don't make me want to pull my eyes out.
Yay.
Oh,
here.
You know, so with all of that, there was, you know, it's one of those films that I think, even with all of its faults, I thoroughly enjoy it.
All right, Pete.
I'm going to go for.
Got to wait for me to ask, man. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Reign of Fire? Okay. Now go.
I'm gonna go with £3, 2 shillings, and tuppence.
I have no idea.
$12.60.
I'm gonna go with 3 gold pieces, gonna echo what Brian said, in that it's, to me, this is one of those movies that it's so bad it's good. It's got a lot of fun moments. The dragons look fantastic. They are potentially scary, especially for younger viewers. They're great apex predators, and it was just fun when Quinn goes and pulls the egg out of the dead one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. And it's a bunch of little things that makes this movie for me. Little lines like the smell of their dead. It's the only thing that they're afraid of.
That dragon smells like shit.
That's what she said. Wait, what?
Wow.
Daisies. It smells like daisies.
Yeah. Right. but it does say they don't like the smell.
Yeah, it's the only thing they're afraid of. The smell of their own dead. So they think that's, you know, it's little things like that that make it for me. But there's no way in shape or form a 5 gold piece movie.
No, it's not.
Well, Chris, you need to tell us how many gold pieces would you give Reign of Fire?
Well, you know, I'm kind of on the fence here, because the 3 sounds like a tempting offer. I might give it 3, but then I come back to all of the problems that, you know, it has in the plot and just some moments.
Well,
like,
I dare you change the number. You know, you don't have
okay,
to.
Okay, like this one right here. Okay,
wait on us.
What do we do? We're trapped.
These silly melodramatic bad acting moments that bring the movie down a little bit. And so I'm going to give it, I really don't think I can in good conscience give it 3. So I'm going to give it 2 gold and 1 electrum.
Ooh. Mm. Wow. Going old school.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really kind of scraping the ceiling to try to get to that 3, but it's just not making it for me.
Okay. Well, we respect that. We know.
I can respect that too.
We respect your opinion.
I don't respect that.
Yeah.
We all think you're wrong.
And yes,
but
definitely,
I usually respect Chris's opinion, but no, I can respect it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me too. For real.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. It's an enjoyable check your brain movie. You know, check your brain at the door. There's a lot of, you know, suspension of disbelief that's required of you in this, but there's maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
And dragon effects are fantastic. I'm never going to argue that.
Well, and this was a perfect example for, you know, the director. After this, he went on and did Elektra, which was not terribly.
No.
Well, no, I'll just go with it was terribly.
Yes.
But he's done lots and lots of TV before and
after
that.
I really don't mind Elektra.
You know, and this is a good example of. Yeah. There is a difference between a TV director and a film director.
True.
Sometimes they can cross over. Sometimes it doesn't work as well.
Not so much.
So.
Yeah, sometimes not so much.
So Chris, do you want to tell us what movie we're doing next? You want to tell the crowd?
We're going to do I'll tell the crowd. We are going to do Beetlejuice next, and hopefully get that out on Halloween.
Great.
And are we going to have a guest on that one?
We are going to have a guest, our friend Calvin, who is a scholar on Beetlejuice.
Oh my word! I did not even know that.
Join us.
Yeah.
Really? Yep.
That turns out, yes.
Wow.
If there is such a thing. He's a huge Tim Burton fan, and he has probably watched Beetlejuice 167 times, and it keeps getting funnier every single time he sees it.
Not to mention, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
He's an actor and a scholar. I mean, he's done a lot of acting. So,
gentleman and scholar.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get
and or a scholar.
Can I think we'll get some good opinions.
All right, that'll do it for us. Now, for following us, you can find us on Twitter, @DragonReel. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/DragonReel. You can Gmail us at DragonReelPodcast@gmail.com. You can subscribe to DragonReel on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave us a review on either of those things. You can follow our Tumblr, which we share with our sister show, the Rule Zero Podcast, which you can find at rulezeropodcast.tumblr.com.
Which I would advise checking out. I have listened to all of them and love them.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. Brian, how can people find you?
You can find me on Trilogy Entertainment on YouTube doing Let's Plays. I'm currently doing a Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor playthrough, and Trilogy Productions on Facebook, Trilogy Productions LLC.
Nice.
Awesome. Pete, how can people find you?
You can find me in the exact same places that you can be found, Christopher, on rulezeropodcast.com, .net,
Wicked.
.org.
I did buy them, but I don't have anything.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I am RZ Pete.
And excellent. Me too, Sharon? The same. Well, I mean, I'm not Pete.
You're not RZ Pete.
But, but
you are Teaching W Site.
Yes, Teaching yes, with Site.
On Twitter.
Yes.
All right, well, that's it for us. So remember, keep your vertical up.